Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to Enterprise Linux Security. I'm here, as always, with Zhao. How are you doing?
All good, Jay. Thanks for having me again.
No problem. It's always great to have you. And we need to talk about some security stuff. And today we have, did you say, is it like 10 different examples of security done wrong?
Yeah, not so much about security done wrong, but the results of security being done wrong, or just people being complacent or whatever. But yeah, we usually talk about how you need to take care of your security and your systems and all that. But it's hard to get across the message of the implications of not doing it right and not doing it on time. And this type of lists, even if it has that SEO type of article name, the 10 biggest breaches on healthcare systems or healthcare data, they do shine a light on that. And we'll go over them and we'll show the numbers and we'll talk a bit about each of them. But again, to emphasize the point that doing security, when you're not doing it correctly, it does bring about consequences and you should be wary of them. It's not just something that, oh, I'll do it whenever or whenever I feel like it or whenever I have the opportunity. Not doing it on time does have consequences.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that in some ways, healthcare breaches are especially scary because there's a, I mean, it's not just personally identifiable information, although there is that. It's also, I mean, it's healthcare. People depend on healthcare. So I feel like that's in some ways the worst thing to target because that's more than just, I mean, obviously stealing someone's identity is bad, but I mean, someone could like have bad health because they can't get services because of some reason, or a worst case scenario, maybe some system gets shut down that they rely on. So there's some very serious consequences here. One thing I'll mention is, I think this is just general advice, not specific to this. If something makes you nervous, if you're a system administrator and something makes you nervous, like, oh gosh, this looks kind of weak over here, let somebody know if it's not your job to fix it and document that you let someone know about it. Because if your company is ever on the news for the wrong reasons, it's like, yeah, I told them like 5 different times that they needed to fix this and I made it very clear. Understand that, you know, you don't want to be the weakest link here. You want to make sure you're looking at these things. And I think some of these examples will help some people understand, like some of the, like you said, the consequences that can happen for not taking this seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And going to your point, there will be scapegoats on each of these breaches. Somebody is getting fired over this. You don't want it to be you. So do cover whatever you're doing. Document the things that you do. I deploy patches on this day. I perform these maintenance tasks on these systems. Keep that documented. And I hate giving this advice because I always thought it was silly, but send it through email so that there's actually a track record that you can point to. Don't just go it over the phone with someone. Actually leave it in written form and have some way of going back to it.
Let your manager know about it and email that individual. Keep a little note for yourself. You know, I sent so-and-so an email at this time and date, so you know like what the metadata is for getting back to that email. That'll definitely help.
And I personally hate giving this advice. I always thought that people should be able to trust each other when they're doing the job, but eventually you will get burned if you don't. So try to avoid it. Take the advice and leave a written trail of whatever activities you're doing. It will be better for you in the long run.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wish this wasn't true. And I don't want to shed negative light on the industry or the job, but we're just kind of calling it what it is. And part of our job is to educate and make people aware of how it actually is in the enterprise. So with all jobs, no matter how awesome and fun they are, there's going to be these few quirks that you have to deal with. And keeping a track record or some kind of log of what you're doing is just one of those things. And that's probably true of many jobs outside of IT all the same. So it's probably not even specific.
Yeah, absolutely agree. This isn't IT specific. It's just that it's more noticeable on IT, on some aspects of IT.
Yeah, And then we look forward to System Administrators Appreciation Day, because that's when not a bunch of people contacting us because there's an issue. It's like, oh, how are you? Here's a gift.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that. Okay. So is there a particular story that you wanted to start with? Because essentially we have the 10, according to this article, the 10 biggest healthcare data breaches of the year.
Yeah, regarding the number of affected people on each breach. Right. And in total, this is over 40 million individuals that were whose information was exposed out of these breaches. And this is a U.S. specific list. So these institutions, these companies that we will be mentioning, and this is already publicized. The list was published on the 30th of November by healthitsecurity.com. We will probably have a link somewhere after on the on the YouTube video. But yeah, we will go over the list that they published, because again, these are the largest ones, but by no means they are the only ones, and we will only be focusing on healthcare institutions this time. This is not specific to healthcare companies. There have been lots of breaches on other industries. GoDaddy, for example, exposed over a million registries, I don't know, a few weeks ago, a few days, depending on whenever you're listening to this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happens on all industries. We just happen to have this list handy, and this showcases most of the issues that that affect all industries and IT.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So keep that in mind, even if you're not in healthcare, it doesn't matter. You can still have some of these issues going on. So
absolutely,
healthcare just means it's a little bit worse in some ways, but doesn't mean that it's unique.
Yeah. Okay, so out of those 40 million, the first one and the largest one by number of impacted individuals, with 3.5 million individuals impacted, is the Florida Healthy Kids Corporation. Interesting name there.
Yeah.
And they announced this breach on January 29th of this year. And apparently the data regards the years of 2013 to 2020, and it was exposed because the health plan website was targeted in a cyber attack. Yeah, with a name like Florida Healthy Kids Corporation, you obviously have children health information there. And with that children's health information, it comes things like social security numbers, birth dates, names, addresses, financial information of the parents, obviously. Mm-hmm. And all of those things, when taken in context, just of this breach alone, can lead to people abusing your identity, people using your information to create fake accounts or trying to get credit ratings or all that. It's so very important on the U.S., U.S. landscape, more so than other places, but having people's social security numbers, full names, addresses, all that, they can impersonate you, basically.
Absolutely. And I think we should spend some you know, put some special attention on the social security number. I mean, you just did that, but even more so, because that's the first thing that kind of worries me here the most, is that these are kids. Obviously, judging by the name of the company, I would assume they're dealing with children. And now that might mean that these kids' social security numbers are leaked out and somebody could steal their identity before they even have an identity of their own. I mean, if you think about that for a minute, because obviously they're not going to be 18, but what I'm hoping doesn't happen is that on their 18th birthday, they get a delinquent credit card notice or something like that, because a bunch of accounts were opened in their name and they didn't do anything with it. So, I mean, the social security number, the reason why it's so bad is it's not like your email ID where you could just delete your email account and get a new one. You can't regenerate your social security number. That's it. You're done. That's the only one you're going to get. So it's not like they could just regenerate a new one and you know, protect themselves that way. So that is, in my opinion, especially egregious about this.
Yeah, and there is another aspect that's very important here. This information, once it's leaked and it's distributed somewhere, it stays out there. Whatever lands on the internet, it's probably going to stay there forever. You'll eventually be able to find it on mirrors or something like that. And more than that, it's going to let attackers aggregate the data with future breaches or existing breaches, so they will be able to create a profile like Facebook has of you, they will be able to create it with just the data from the breaches. So at some point, they will know as much about you as probably Facebook does with all of their data points, or Google or something like that. And they will be collecting this information over multiple sources, of because you don't have your information in just one place. It's not like you only have your social security number or your full name or your address here on this corporation or on this system. You will probably have it on dozens of other places.
Yep.
Now they have a way to match information from one breach to the other, and they can increase it and enhance it and get a better understanding of who you are and target you better.
Yeah, another thing too is that December in the United States, at least, we are, you know, it's the end of the year everywhere, but it's the end of the tax year here. So starting in January, people could file their taxes to get a tax return. And one element of fraud that we deal with is that if you don't put some kind of a PIN lock on your account or something like that, somebody could file a tax return for you into their bank account and you don't get the money. And these items here, I mean, yeah, these are kids are not filing tax returns, but there's probably adults in there too that now they're robbed of their tax return. And that's incredibly common. And the first one is about kids. The rest of them, I don't think are specific to kids. So that's a very common thing to go after. So overall, this is really bad.
Yeah. And 3.5 million records. Come on. That's a lot of individuals.
Right.
It's a lot of information. And again, this is something that's going to be out there basically forever. You won't be able to get rid of this. Once it's publicized somewhere, once it gets on the darknet, it gets traded and it gets sold or whatever, copies will be left somewhere. You won't be able to put the genie back in the bottle.
Right.
And apparently this all started with the website, the health plan website being the target of an attack. And while we don't have the specific details of that cyber attack, it happens. And some websites are attacked and others are attacked and not breached because they are more resilient or they have better security measures in place. Without knowing the full details of the attack on this one, it's a bit tricky to criticize it one way or another, but something failed somewhere and it failed spectacularly.
So either the information was right there on the website for them to take with the security vulnerabilities, or getting into the website meant that they could then get into another system after that down the chain. So it's probably one or the other.
Yeah. Probably from the website, they jumped to the database or to some other API endpoint inside the network or something, and were able to access all the data.
One of my biggest pet peeves is that a lot of these apps out there, they actually have the database credentials in a flat file in plain text. I mean, the thing is, yes, it is root protected. You have to have access to the root account. But as soon as you're able to switch to the root account, you can get that database password and the endpoint URL and the port number, all the stuff you need just to start doing a MySQL dump or whatever, and you're done. You have everything right there. And it's so easy to do that. I'm not telling anyone to do this, obviously, but it's like a MySQL dump. I mean, you can Google how to do that. It's very easy to do. Yeah. And with that information often in plain text files, that really scares me.
Two notes here. First, getting 3.5 million records should have raised the red flag somewhere. Mm-hmm. You either should have noticed the spike in traffic, or this should have been done in a very long period of time where you should have noticed that you had repeated the requests for the information. And somewhere, some system should have flagged this as malicious behavior before it reached this point.
Right.
The other note is that even when they're not using database credentials and you accessing them as root, as you just described, some applications are designed to use hidden API endpoints, but they're only hidden until somebody looks at the code or looks at the configuration file or whatever, and then it's right there and you can use it from a browser somewhere. It's not the right way to secure this. And 3.5 million individuals will have their information out there basically forever.
Wow. Yeah, that's horrible. Yeah, 3.5 million. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh boy. So the next one we want to talk about is especially unique because this company apparently was using Amazon Web Services or AWS, a cloud provider. I'm sure most of you know what that is, but they might have thought that by putting things on the cloud, they were especially protected. But the next one is 2020 iCare Network at just over 3.2 million individuals that were a part of that.
Yeah. And this one has that particularity that you just mentioned. Out of the 10 in this list, this is the only one that's cloud-based. The breach happened on a cloud-based system. And there are two aspects to this again. First, even if it's running on the cloud, if it's hosted on the cloud, if you're running a virtual machine on the cloud or whatever where you're hosting this system, it's still your responsibility as the IT person on the company to take care of that system. Your cloud provider will not do that for you. Whether it's an on-premises system or it's on the cloud, you have to keep it patched, you have to keep it secure, and it's your responsibility to do that. Everything that happens inside that VM, it's on you. You cannot expect your cloud provider to do that. You either have it on your patch management systems as any other system, or you have some rotation in place where you destroy the VM on a specific date and recreate it from an update image that your cloud provider has. But either way, it's something that you should have managed. You cannot leave that to third parties.
Right.
Probably on this case, it was just a leaky bucket, which is an unprotected database stored on AWS somewhere, which happens all the time again. And this was apparently on earlier this year. So yeah, it was, I could bet you another leaky bucket.
Right. Probably something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the main thing there with that. When it comes to cloud, it seems like a lot of people seem to confuse cloud with managed services. So with a managed service, you are paying another company to take care of it for you. Like maybe your system administration team, you just don't have enough people or enough resources there. So you just have a particular app moved over to them and then they take care of everything for you. So you're not just paying for the hosting, you're paying for the services they provide. But with a cloud provider, you're essentially just using someone else's data center. It's still, like you said, your responsibility. You need to patch your servers and protect them. Amazon calls that the shared responsibility model. They make it very clear in the documentation that, you know, whose responsibility that is. But of course, people probably aren't reading that. And a lot of this is just assumption. I don't know what the company knew or didn't know, but it's often the case that people do mistake managed services and cloud providers, unfortunately.
Yeah. As to the information that was leaked, it was again social security numbers, name, addresses, birth dates, health insurance information, and they add something else here. The information could have been exposed or deleted. This means right. There could have been changes to the data. And this is even more insidious. If somebody breaches a database and instead of stealing all the information, they just change some numbers inside of it. They just say, for example, change the bank account number or something like that. That can take longer to spot, and that can have even far-reaching consequences because people could stop receiving their payroll. It could be sent to some other account somewhere. We don't know if this happened in this case or not, but having information being changed is almost as dangerous or even more dangerous than just being stolen.
Right. Yeah. So there's some missing information in a lot of these that I would love to be able to go through, like the order of operations for, like, you know, first the attacker did this and then they did that.
Yeah.
But information is pretty limited here. So we basically know what we have in the article. And, you know, it's cloud, but yeah.
Yeah. Basically, this list can be compiled because there have been so many breaches in the news lately, and it's healthcare information and it's important. And there is regulation that stipulates that this type of breaches have to be made public. Either it's the HIPAA compliance thing that has to be met by these companies, HIPAA.
Yep.
this type of information has to be made public. And earlier this year, there has been another presidential decree, presidential order, I don't know the exact name that you guys give it there in the US, but there is something that President Biden has ordered that mandates that even on non-healthcare, that information now has to be made public as well. And there is a specific deadline where when you spot a system that has been breached on your organization or you had a cyber attack or something like that, you have to inform someone about that. You have to let people know that this happened. Because oftentimes companies would just hide it and brush it off and nobody talks about it. It didn't happen. Business as usual. Now it has to be made public. And probably this list is one of the results of this type of information being made public. And you can probably expect this to be expanded or new articles to come up on other industries.
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. That just goes to show you there's just all kinds of different elements here, different factors, and you know the cloud aspect of it is, I don't feel like this is going to be the last time we're going to hear of a cloud or a company that uses cloud having an issue, because I think that's just an accident waiting to happen if they're not taking that seriously, and there's extra responsibility there for sure.
Yeah,
and we also have Forefront Dermatology, which seems to be at the forefront for giving unauthorized access to information on their network.
Yeah, absolutely. Apparently, they call it an unauthorized party, and they say that it had access to their IT network and accessed files with names, birth dates, patient account numbers, addresses, the usual type of things. They do say that they found evidence that only a small number of patient information was specifically involved. But this small number here still amounts to almost 2.5 million records. And if that is a small number, and in context it may very well be, you can imagine the full scope of this if it had been let run its full course, or if we are being told the whole truth about the affected records, because this is something that is even... it's hard to track down as after the fact. You either have some type of auditing system that lets you know after a fact which files were accessed at which point, and this isn't trivial to configure properly. If you've ever managed the file server for thousands of users, you will realize the issues here with actually auditing all the accesses and file changes and whenever things get accessed and deleted and all that. It's a huge amount of information. It's not very manageable. Right. And after a time, you have to recycle it because it will take too much space. So, yeah, this is the information that they say they know they have evidence for that was accessed. And we have to take their word for it, obviously. This is another concern. If you're managing large file servers or any file server of any size, actually, look into auditing services or auditing software, something that can keep a track of what files were accessed by which users and at what point, what was done to the files, if they were created, deleted, modified, and keep timestamps of that. It's also important for IT security.
Yeah, and security credentials or actually certifications require you to have such systems in place. And I would wonder if that was a requirement here too with HIPAA, but that's very true. You want to know when things are accessed, what was done to those files. Yep. And it's interesting that it looks like the attacker or the outside party took their network offline as part of this as well. So that could mean they downloaded a bunch of information, took it offline, or whatever they did to the information, and then they just, turn everything off. So, I can't connect to anything here. Yeah, we've been breached.
I don't know if it was the attacker that took it off or if it was the IT team that realized they were being breached and decided to take their systems offline as a security precaution. Because what you see on movies when you have the IT team and the hackers trying to get in and everybody is typing furiously at their keyboards trying to stop something from happening, it doesn't have to be that way. You go to the cable where the access is coming in and you unplug it and access stops.
I've done that. I have literally done that for that reason. I've disconnected something because I thought that it could have been...
we're being attacked. We don't know which systems. Unplug everything and look.
Yeah, just disconnect outside access altogether and you're done. And look at your VPN connections too. Any persistent VPN connections, drop all of them. And shut your VPN server down.
And this is actually something that you should keep track of. What do I need to do to take everything offline? In case of an emergency, what steps do I need to take to ensure that all connections are dropped, that all systems are shut down correctly and nothing gets lost in the process? You should have this operation written down. You should have either some way of doing it automatically at the press of a button, or just the process detailed on a document somewhere that you can refer to and use it in a situation like this. If you notice that the system is having a much higher than expected load, or that you see records being accessed when they shouldn't, or something like that on your database, take it offline as a precaution. It's probably better than showing up in a list like this afterwards.
Yep, definitely agreed. So what else do we have on our magic list of intrusions here?
We have a very fun name here, Capture X.
Capture, I think it's RX.
Capture RX. X-ray. And they had something that they announced in February, a data breach as well, and 1.6 million, approximately a bit over 1.6 million records. And this is specifically insidious again, because they are an IT vendor that helps healthcare systems manage drug programs. You can expect them to be having a lot of work in the current environment. So, having an attack that take systems offline at a moment like this, it's especially nasty, and having records stolen at this moment, other than the personally identifiable information, which is awful to have exposed. Imagine this. Imagine that the breach systems, in addition to the personally identifiable information, also exposed, say, the new drugs that you're working on, or the results of the studies that you're doing, or if the competitor analysis that you're running is on those systems and it gets leaked. The financial impact of that to a company, it can take it out of business, basically.
Right. And reputation is especially important with an IT vendor, which they are.
Yeah.
So this would have been a major hit to their reputation in the IT space, because it's especially egregious if you're an IT company and you're selling services to other companies, then you yourself have a problem, then you might find that people aren't so keen on having you help them out anymore.
Yeah. As we were discussing before starting the recording, in a few years, if you ask anybody what they think of a company, say, like Equifax, what do you think is the first thing they'll remember?
The breach.
The breach. Yeah. That stain is going to stay with them for basically forever. They should rebrand at some point just to get people to forget about that and the association of the name with that breach, because this type of bad publicity, it doesn't go away easily. There's not much you can do.
They could try to change their name and hope that no one links the two or people don't notice. They should change their name anyway, because they have the word fax in their name, and it's not 1993 right now. So that's another story altogether, though.
Yeah, absolutely. If you recall, when Cambridge Analytica, when that thing with Facebook came out, that those guys were doing some analysis on the data that they shouldn't and accessing data that they shouldn't, they rebranded. They changed their name right the next week or something like that, just to escape this.
Oh boy. That's a little too soon to change your name. I mean, that's too obvious. I mean, it's almost as bad as Comcast being rebranded to Xfinity. Everybody knows it's Comcast. Oh boy. Yeah.
Yeah. Fun times. Now the next one on the list, and this is Eskenazi. Weird name there.
Yeah,
Eskenazi Health. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. With a bit over 1.5 million. This one had a different impact. This led to emergency services being diverted and ambulances being sent away from their hospitals or their clinics or whatever. This could have a direct impact on people getting assistance in a timely manner. And something like this happened. I believe it wasn't this year. It was early last year or 2 years ago with this single staying at home. Time just dilated. In Germany, something similar happened with a ransomware attack, and their systems were shut down for a while. And somebody that was arriving at the hospital on an ambulance actually died on the way to the new hospital where it was diverted to. So, yeah, taking down this type of systems, this has a real impact, and this can definitely affect people's health. It's not just something that's hypothetical. It's not something that may happen. This has already happened, this type of situation.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's just exactly what I was mentioning at the beginning of the recording, because it's, if you're in trouble and you need help, you want to reasonably rely on the services that are available in your area to help you. And situations like this would potentially complicate that and mean that people can't get the care that they need in that moment. I understand people that steal information. They don't have a conscience, but it's, come on, leave the healthcare companies alone. At least leave the patients alone. I mean, it's horrible to do that anyway, but especially when it affects people's lives, it's even worse.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And this type of attacks, this type of information stealing and ransomware attacks, this was a ransomware attack, by the way. This has been growing on recent years, basically because the attackers have managed to find a way to more easily monetize the attacks. Ever since cryptocurrency was introduced, now they have a way that's, it's not untraceable, but it's much harder to trace, to actually get and reap the benefits of the attack that they're doing. Beforehand, they could try to extort some management somewhere on some company, but they would usually be caught pretty quickly. Right now, it's not like that. Right now, somebody running a shady business operation on some faraway land can attack your hospital in the middle of the US and require you to pay a ransom to get your systems back. And you pay them and they will never be caught, basically. Or they will very hardly ever be caught. And it's just easier to do for the attackers. So, yeah, that's why you're seeing the rise in ransomware.
Yep, definitely agreed. On our list as well is my local grocery store chain, of all things. Here in Michigan, there's a Kroger pretty much everywhere, and in some other states in the area as well. So this, when I saw Kroger being on here, I'm like, oh my gosh, I know them. I was there just the other day. Not for medical reasons, though, just for getting some pizza rolls or barbecue chips. I'm not sure which, but they're on our list.
Yeah, apparently they have a division called Kroger Health and Many Services, and those were the ones that were impacted. It was a 1.4 million records as well. I mean, why the hell do you need to store this much information anyway?
Right. I don't get that.
Millions of records again, and this happened in the middle of the year. And yeah, it's the same type of thing. Lots of people impacted because someone somewhere thought it was a good idea to centralize all the information and then didn't properly store it or secure it.
Yeah, that's another reason why this keeps happening. Just consolidate everything into one place. Yeah. Make it that much easier for someone to get everything from that one place.
Yeah. The attackers will thank you.
I sure will.
Next one, with again 1,400,000 records, it's St. Joseph's Candler Health System. And they found out that they had a ransomware attack in one of their systems, and it led to emergency systems being down for a while. And yeah, as a result of this, some patients are also filing class action lawsuits against them, alleging that they were negligent in preventing the attack, which apparently was undetected for 6 months.
Wow.
If you're running a system and it takes you 6 months to find out that you have a ransomware attack in that system, how important is the system actually for you?
Well, how important is your job?
Yeah, how important is your job? But if you're not looking at the system for 6 months, even if you're basic maintenance or just checking to see if all the systems are up or something like that, just logging into the system, and you don't spot there's a ransomware running there. I don't want to say you're doing something wrong, but you are. There's not many ways to put this. Not right. Logging into a system for 6 months means that either the system is not important and it shouldn't be on, or you should definitely take a better look at your management systems and find out how that can happen.
And to your point, one of the quotes from a lawsuit filing associated with this is, it wasn't a simple software glitch or temporary power outage. It was instead a complete information technology meltdown. Yeah. Wow. They don't mince words at all in that filing.
Yeah, they're not very gentle there. No. After we go through the list, we'll have some comments on how we see this. But let's continue. And mm-hmm. The next one is the University Medical Center, Southern Nevada, with 1,300,000 records. And again, they were victim to Rival. This is another ransomware. As you can see, ransomware is ranking pretty high on this list. And The hackers posted photos of passports, social security cards, and driver's license. Okay, first question. Why were they storing photos of passports and social security cards and driver's license? I mean, you can store just the numbers if you need them.
You can. And the thing is, at least here in the United States, I don't like this, but it's the way it is, unfortunately. Everything medical related, they always scan everything. So if I go to a doctor for the very first time, let's just say I moved or I just changed insurance companies, they're going to ask for the card and I'll watch them do it. They put it in a scanner and they scan it right into the system and all that. So passports, I don't know why that would be there unless that was used in place of an identification card or something like that. But that does happen. And I have mixed feelings. Like, the more information you have, the more there is to steal. But then the other thing is, there wouldn't be a problem with them storing this information if it was locked down and nobody could access it, which unfortunately people were able to do.
And I have another question about this. Mm-hmm. 1,300,000 sets of pictures, because it's not just one image, it's the passport, social security number. That's a lot of images. That's a lot of data. You don't spot that huge spike of traffic going through somewhere?
I have 10,000 pictures, I think, in my photos folder, and it's a really sizable folder with just 10,000 photos on there. So if you think about it, like 1.3 million people times however many pictures per person, we're talking 5-10 million pictures at this point. That's going to be a huge traffic spike, like you were saying.
It doesn't matter if this is a university IT team or whatever, and they have lots of traffic all the time. This would show up as a spike any way you look at it. Either the attackers were moving one image every minute or something like that for it not to be noticeable, but then they wouldn't have the time to move so many.
Right.
Otherwise, this would show up as a huge spike there. You should have been alerted of this even by your SIEM system or something like that. Somebody somewhere should have seen this.
I think part of the problem is that although IO obviously affects CPU, people generally spend more time checking the memory in the CPU and not so much IO, although yes, IO is going to affect the CPU. So either way you look at it, it's going to be a problem, but it could also be, it's no excuse that they're just looking at the wrong things. Or like you were saying earlier with another example, they just didn't care, didn't bother looking. Oh yeah, they're complaining that the network's slow today. They always complain about that. Moving on, it's lunchtime, and they don't take it seriously. And the next thing you know, something like this happens.
Yeah, but usually the routers are in, even not very advanced core routers will have a functionality that alerts you when the traffic that you're seeing is over, I don't know, 80% of usual or something like that for an extended period of time. And it would have been in this case. I mean, there are ways to move this amount of data without raising those red flags, but it would take much longer, much, much longer. And this is a tremendously huge amount of records here. If you have two or three images, and that's probably on the low side for each of the records, like you said, this is, we're looking at 5 million images.
Yep.
you can look at the images you have on your computer right now and imagine how large 5 million of those would be.
That's a huge amount of data.
It's a huge amount of data. This should be noticeable.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know exactly why it, why they didn't find out or why they didn't notice that.
Yeah, that's. We can only hope to see a deep dive on an attack like this.
Right.
Okay, and we probably should move through the next ones pretty quickly. It's American anesthesiology with 1.2 million records exposed. Somebody gained access to their email system. And again, getting access to your email system should not mean that you have access to your medical records. So somewhere around there was some trust between systems that did not need to happen. The email service did not need to see the files for the medical records in any way. And then Practice First with 1.2 million breach records had another ransomware attack that exposed the personally identifiable information of patients and employees. Again, another ransomware attack. We were talking about this a bit before we started recording. You should definitely take a good look at the best practices on securing your environment. And we've gone through them repeatedly on this podcast, and you can find information about it basically everywhere you look for it. Having patches deployed on time. We at TechScare, we run a survey with the Ponemon Institute. We will be releasing this in probably the beginning of the next year. We will be making this public, but there are some findings that I can already share with you. And one of the numbers that actually jumps out of the page as soon as I saw the early numbers coming in from that survey. And this is mind-blowing. For important or critical vulnerabilities with patches available, most companies, 60-something percent, are taking over 5 weeks to deploy patches. Okay, let's go over that again. 5 weeks to deploy readily available patches for important or critical vulnerabilities.
So I think I understood that as hackers have a 5-week grace period to get into your system.
Basically, that's what it means.
Yeah.
If you're taking 5 weeks to deploy patches against important or critical vulnerabilities, I'm not talking about the ones that take a million steps to be able to be exploitable and you already need that physical access to the system or something like that.
Right.
These are the type of vulnerabilities that are exploited remotely and will get you root access into a system, basically. That's not the correct definition, but that's basically what they are. Someone can access your systems remotely without physical access, without any previous account there, and they can have access to the information on that system. That's basically how you define a critical vulnerability. And it takes you 5 weeks to deploy the patch for known vulnerabilities with that characteristics. Then you're doing something wrong. You should have those patching deployments to be prioritized over everything else that you're doing. Whenever you see a critical vulnerability coming down the pipeline and you see information about that, and somewhere on the article that you're reading it says patches are already available, then you should either schedule a maintenance window today or tomorrow, but never 5 weeks from now.
Right.
It doesn't matter what else, what other implications it has. It shouldn't never take 5 weeks. Because like you just said, those 5 weeks are 5 weeks where the hackers also know about the exploit. They are scanning for systems that are vulnerable to that, and they will exploit it, and they will try to deploy ransomware or get information out of those systems. And you should never wait so long for patching.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And one more comment I'll make. This one is actually about American anesthesiology, where their email system was exposed. That should surprise me, but it doesn't. And the reason why is because it happens way too often where I'm subscribing to a service, signing up for a thing, or even medical companies do this too. And I can't understand the logic. Like, fill out these forms and email them back. Okay, this form is asking for like my credit card number and social security number. And you want me to send this over regular email? And I will tell them no. And they'll get upset at me, but it, you know, I'm usually a nice person, but when they're asking for something like this over email, it's way too common. And I'll literally tell them, you should never ask for this over email. That is a bad thing. You should not do this. And no, I will not send this over email. And if I'm in a really good mood, I might actually send them an encrypted email and then sometime later give them a phone call and, you know, relay some kind of code to them. But I probably won't do that either because, you know, they're probably just going to put it in the same system it was going to end up in anyway. And then, you know, you have the same problem. And that can't be HIPAA compliant as far as I know, but that's just not something anybody should ask for. And too many people use email for things they shouldn't be using it for.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the point of asking for information, it's like when hackers will try the human exploit first and will try to ask you for, oh, I just need to confirm your data for this account. Can you send me the login and password so that I can check something?
Mm-hmm.
No support anywhere for any system will ever have to ask you for your password. Never, ever, ever give it out.
Right.
It doesn't happen. If somebody is asking you for your password, it doesn't matter if they say they're your dad or they're your kid that needs money immediately. You don't give them the password. Okay.
Right.
You find some other way to solve the situation, even if you're the one that will have to make the call. Because if you receive a call, oh, we're at bank so-and-so and we're checking the all the client's data because we had an issue here. I need your account number and your credentials or something for your e-banking. Don't give them the credentials. Call them back. And they will probably tell you, we never did that call. We never placed that call to you. And yeah, if you take nothing else from this, then that's your information for the day. Take patching seriously. Known vulnerabilities being exploited, it happens, but you should never let systems just sit tight in a corner just hoping that they will not be breached. They will, and it can lead to being on lists like this, and it's hard to get out.
Yeah, it really is. The effects is like a domino effect of in different directions of what this type of thing causes. We've seen it time and time again. So, hopefully these serve as examples for, I'm hoping everyone that listens to this podcast takes security seriously. Otherwise, why would they even be listening to it? But if you notice anything that you could be doing better, now is a great time to let the right people know or do it yourself if it's your responsibility to do that, or at least document that you've made that recommendation. And take patching seriously.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So I think that's everything for this particular episode. Thank you all for watching and or listening. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you in the next episode.
Yeah. See you in the next one.